The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Special shout out to all of our returning champions and new listeners. Hello, I'm Mark Ellis. I'm a stand-up comic, Rotten Tomatoes correspondent, and son of Odin.
I'm Jacqueline Coley. I'm an editor at Rotten Tomatoes, where I cover independent film and awards. And I'm still laughing about the fact that Mark Ellis thinks he's a god.
Did I sound Asgardian at all?
No. A little. Asgardian-ish.
No. Okay, well, look, a lot of people debate whether Thor got his due or not, whether he got the shaft, what he was doing in a hot tub in this movie, which is why we're talking about Avengers Age of Ultron. And it's also, Jacqueline, because WandaVision was just released on Disney Plus, and that stars Wanda, the Black Scarlet Witch, excuse me, not Black Widow, Scarlet Witch and Vision. And this is the first time those two lovebirds met was in Avengers Age of Ultron, or as I call it, Avengers Part 2. Reminder that y'all can get in touch with us. Let us know what movies you want us to be covering on upcoming episodes, all that sort of stuff, whether you think our opinion was right or wrong. You can email us rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. That's rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. We are looking at a movie that is certified fresh, which is the good news, at 76%, which for any run-of-the-mill movie, Jacqueline, is pretty good numbers. It gets you into most colleges, but this is an MCU movie, and this has Avengers on the poster, so you'd think it would be in the 90s with the rest of those flicks. It does have an 83% audience score, but of all the Avengers movies, it's the lowest on the tomato meter and audience score. And when people do their MCU lists, which is now like, what, 23, 24 movies deep, they usually have Avengers Age of Ultron on the lower side of that. So we're going to get into all of that, why certain fans don't think it holds up, what it did to set up the future of the MCU as we now know it. Whole lot of stuff to get to, plus a very special guest. Before we get into all of that, Jacqueline, can you tell me succinctly what happens in Avengers Age of Ultron?
No, I can't, but I'm going to give it a try. All right, we continue the adventures of the Avengers. Of course, this is Earth's Mightiest Heroes. They consist of Captain America, Iron Man, Black Widow, Thor, the Hulk, Hawkeye, and we're adding some new folks into Nick Fury's best fighting machine. Tony Stark and his crew have been faced with some, we say, big challenges from outside folks. And so they decide they're going to make a robot. And so they make Ultron, that is Tony Stark and Bruce Banner. And then Ultron turns evil, kills Jarvis. And then the Avengers are off to the races to try and save the world. Along the way, they meet two, we can't call them mutants because this is not the right universe, but that's what they are. Scarlet Witch and her brother, who is Quicksilver. He's really fast. She's really weird, to quote Maria Hill. And yeah, they are sort of doing Ultron's bidding until they realize that Ultron is going to end the world. And in doing so, Ultron decides that he, as a progeny, wants to make his own. He makes his own, which becomes Vision. They take the Mind Stone. Thor goes on some adventures, and it's a really, really big movie with a lot of things going on, but I still love it.
Ambition is just the beginning point. And it's a nice little warning flick for all those people out there, Jacqueline, like me and my brother were as kids, where you're trying to build a robot in your garage. And then all of a sudden you say, wait, is this even a good idea? Will I get grounded? I don't know if my mom would have grounded us if she ever caught the robot that my brother and I made. It basically consisted of stealing of three of her pots. Lucy, our producer, is a mom. Lucy, your kid is not old enough yet to be building robots as far as we know. Or do we?
She loves robots. She could potentially be building them in her bedroom at night. I don't know. She never goes to bed.
That could be the sign of a robot builder. Well, our special guest that we're welcoming in today, he's not only one of my good buddies, he might be a cyborg, as a matter of fact, because I've just never seen anybody bring so much positive energy to each and everything that he does. Not since the late, great Brody Stevens has the word positive energy so closely correlated with someone I know. And that would be a huge comic book fan, incredible host, director, producer, does all the things on all the shows. He is Coy John Drew. Coy, welcome. You are now amongst your friends.
I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to weirdly talk negatively about something I feel mostly positive about by way of the universe, but it's going to be a very not tonally coy day because this movie's got some problems.
All right, man. Well, let's roll up our sleeves and get into it then. The show is Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. The score is currently 76%. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong on this, Coy? It sounds like you think they might be.
Rotten Tomatoes is wrong in that it should be fresh, but not this fresh. I'm talking 60%. I'm talking 59%. I'm talking this is a warning shot to the entire MCU of how it could have gone horribly, horribly wrong. Ooh. It should be fresh, but this movie almost set us on the wrong course for the entire future of the empire that is the MCU.
Wow.
Such a myopic look at life.
Calling hot take from Coy. Jacqueline is Rotten
Tomatoes.
He
says this after reading my article.
I loved your article, and that is the basis that I usually stand by. But you look at the way the ship got steered after this film. This is looking back at phase two through phase three lens. We can see a lot of merit, but retroactive history doesn't work for a moment in film. So, ooh, like when this initially came out, this was a series of scenes in search of a movie. When you build to new movies later that retroactively make them work, that's great. But this is one puzzle, not a series of puzzles. And this movie was a hodgepodge of trying to sell me things. It was a prequel sequel. It was Iron Man 2 all over again. It was the only movie with an Avengers thing in front of it that felt like they just went like, okay, we need to put these scenes in for later, but let's not worry about the glue that's going to hold it together.
Coming and in hot. Just
the
coming
Under
in
Armour,
hot.
The beats, the so many things. It felt like a Disney film, and this is the only one that feels like a Disney film. It's the only one that I felt like they were really putting their fingers in it, and they learned some lessons, and then the Russos took over, but we'll get into that later. It's just a lot.
I am currently wearing Under Armour shorts as I attempt to go to the gym after we taped this broadcast. Jacqueline, you have written about this film extensively. You have deep thoughts on it. Do you agree with Coy? Is it a fresh movie that's just too high in the tomato meter, or is it maybe not high enough?
I mean, this is probably the last time we're going to say this on this episode, but I agree with Coy in the sense that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong, but not that it should be barely fresh in the realm of Spider-Man 2, girl. I would actually say that this movie was judged a bit too harshly, and it should make itself into that mid-level 80 place of like some of the secondary but still enjoyable MCU movies, like, you know, the first Ant-Man. Again, not a perfect movie, had a lot of good things going for it, things like that. This movie, when I really think about it, and I will get into it in more depth, it is a Simone Biles type situation in the sense of you have to take into account the difficulty. And I know that you can call it retroactively making it fit, but I actually, based on what we know, think that there was a framework that they had to put in place on this. It wasn't about retroactively making this stuff work. These tentpoles were laid down for the road that they went in future. And that's really what caused it to feel so disjointed. And so although it is a disjointed movie that has a ton of issues as far as like compelling narrative storytelling, for what it achieved, I give it so much of a pass. And so it's one of those situations like at the Olympics where they have to keep explaining to folks on the announcers. It's like the reason why she got a higher score even though she had a lower execution or she messed up, is because of the difficulty. So like, this is that situation where the difficulty was so high. They were asking so much of this movie that the fact that it is even passable is a miracle.
Degree of difficulty. You have maybe hindsight being 2020. There's a lot to unpack with Avengers, Age of Ultron. I'm going to go ahead and say this right now, and then I might regret it later. I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong because I don't think that the score is high enough upon rewatching the movie. And I don't think I was just putting on my 2021 glasses to watch a movie that was released in 2015. But now I have some time to think about that because, as usual, our friend Tim Ryan, the Rotten Tomatoes expert review curator, is going to come in and let us know what the critics were saying about Avengers Age of Ultron when it was released in May of 2015. So, Tim, buy me some time.
Thanks, Mark. So, Avengers Age of Ultron is sort of considered this weird disappointment in the Marvel Universe, which is very strange if you look at it, because it's certified fresh on the tomato meter. It's 76% with 370 reviews, and it's got an 83% audience score. So what exactly is the issue? You'd look at that and you say, well, this is a pretty well-reviewed movie. This seems like a success. It made a lot of money. And I think the issue was that the first Avengers movie was the culmination of years and years of getting to know these heroes, watching them fight together. And it was sort of the dream come true for any one of us who sort of dreamed of like having all these superheroes from Marvel in one place. So by the time the second one rolled around, we kind of knew the formula a little bit better, and it seemed a little bit lacking by comparison. So what some of the critics have to say? In a fresh review, Dwight Brown from the National Newspaper Publishers Association wrote, "There's little in this film that's new, but it doesn't matter. The characters are still entertaining, the action scenes thrilling and near orgasmic, and the human relationships touching." In a rotten review, however, James Berardinelli of Real Views wrote, "Age of Ultron disappoints not because it's irredeemably bad, but because it fails to achieve the level of its predecessor in nearly every facet." When Avengers came out, there was a sense that all these superheroes together was in its own way kind of gigantic and kind of thrilling and huge. But what you do for an encore is, do you make it even bigger? Do you put in more superheroes? Do you make the action scenes even more bombastic? And I think that's what a lot of fans and critics struggled with a bit on this one. Not that it's necessarily terrible. It's just not quite as novel and maybe bigger in a way that doesn't feel quite as exciting. I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. I liked it. Excelsior.
I think Tim might be our own personal Ultron. Did you just hear how soothing his voice was? But just with a tinge of menace of the venom some critics might have for Age of Ultron. Tim Ryan, you are the robot that hopefully is going to put a shield around the world, but might end up destroying us all. I'm just not sure which one. So yeah, critics were divided on this one. And Koi, Jacqueline, I feel like a lot of it is inevitable comparisons to the first Avengers because we are so excited. And when you talk about the degree of difficulty, I thought Joss Whedon had a monster task with that first Avengers movie, getting them all together into one movie and making it coherent. So now we get a bigger story, we get more emotions out of Age of Ultron, and we certainly have a lot more to set up. But Koi, you feel like the movie just, is it just that it gets muddled? Is there a scene that you can point to that you say, that is what I'm talking about, where this movie is just not as fresh as the tomato meter claims?
So I think listening to Jacqueline especially, I think we'd actually agree if this wasn't an MCU film. I'm judging it on the merits, not of comic book movies, but on MCU films. This is the movie that followed Iron Man 3, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy. This is when the MCU knew who it was, and I think it lost its path very clearly in the scene that most people that love comics talk about, the very shoehorned in Thor tripping balls in the water of a cave scene. I'm not really sure at what point they thought they should add an element of Selvig knowing more about mystic arts than Thor. I'm not sure at what point they thought that him like imagining a future Ragnarok that they never really pay off in the films that they did so carefully set up in the future. And I think I misspoke. I didn't mean that there was a retroactive improvement on the film. I mean the film is more enjoyable retroactively for the viewer's experience because of Endgame. So because of Infinity War and Endgame, your memory of your experience with Age of Ultron improves because you know where it pays off. That's not to discredit them laying the groundwork. I'm saying when you watch the film initially, you can't give it the credit of the payoff later because it needs to be acknowledged. Like the movie itself, when you walk out and see the credits, those are moments are what you have in 2015. Now, I can appreciate that the MCU is an incredible TV series that are 2 hour long episodes. I love that about it. It's 24 episodes of my favorite show in the world. I'm an MCU junkie, as you know, but you can't end an episode and go, I bet later on I'll like that more. You need to see it for what it is in the moment, which is why Iron Man 2 didn't work, because they kept trying to put stuff in there. So for me, the Thor scene of, hey, this is really going to matter later, ignore the fact that right now it's just crazy, really establishes what the whole movie feels like for me. But when they slow down, you're getting what Joss Whedon was trying to build. When they have the farmhouse, when they have all these scenes that are actual dialogue between the Avengers, it doesn't feel like Michael Bay light. This movie okay. has 10 third act set pieces.
Jacqueline, jump in there, because it looks like you have strong thoughts on the Thor hot tub time machine.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry. There is no woman watching that movie that is going to be like, oh, they put Chris Hemsworth in it and he's naked. I'm like, oh. Stop it. Stop it. Don't do it. I don't care how nonsensical it is. There's literally a story on Graham Norton where Chris Hemsworth said, no, I've been training. I'm going to show it. And so he wanted to show it. And I am happy that he did. Going back to that scene. Yes, it doesn't make any sense. Yes, it's absolutely ridiculous. And the whole way that they set up Ragnarok is just bizarre, because honestly, I don't think Joss knew where the hell that was going to go. And he felt like they were giving him this Herculean task. And honestly, if you want to know my personal opinion, that was a throwaway scene. That was a note that he had to do. And he's like, you got to make sure you set up Ragnarok. And so he wrote that stupid scene with Erik Selvig, and he takes Thor out of the action because that's what they told him to do. If you really look at it, this movie is required to set up every single standalone that they have coming up after that in some minor way. They set up Black Panther. They set up the Black Widow movie, which didn't happen originally because Joss was supposed to be the person to direct it. And that's what sort of pushed it down the list. And they try to set up that movie. They try to set up what they hoped would be the standalone Hulk movie if they could get the rights back from Universal. They never did. And so they spread that across the two Infinity War movies. But like, they're setting up so much BS. And I think he just got tired of it. So I look at that scene and I thought of it at the time. I was like, this seems like a studio note. That's where I felt like people's hands were in it. And I just think he kind of broke on that one. But when you look at all the other notes that he was asked to do, especially the ones that I think he thought he was going to have a say in, like Civil War, there's a lot there. And I right, think, you know,
if we make the argument that hindsight is 2020, I can also say that at the time when I was in the theater watching Age of Ultron, I wasn't thinking when Thor takes his shirt off and goes into the water, like, oh, this is a throwaway scene. First of all, the one thing I was thinking is hashtag life goals. The next thing I was thinking is this is cool because it's not answering the question right away. Now, Coy, if this was like the end movie, if this was Avengers Endgame or Return of the Jedi or Return of the King or something like that, and we leave with a scene and it's like, well, what the hell did that mean? Then I have problems. But it is such an episodic feel. And by this time in the MCU, we were accustomed to that I give it a pass, particularly because that's not the whole movie. Sure. Most of the movie to me is this fun adventure combined with a deeply emotionally moving piece about the cost of being a superhero. But my favorite scene is still the party scene. I mean, the party scene at the beginning. I love the way this movie opens, because the movie opens and it's like you're a kid reading a giant panel, because it's just this awesome action sequences. Everybody is working so well as a team. They're making fun of Cap and his prudish nature. And then we get to celebrate afterwards. It's like, okay, we just won another Super Bowl. Now we're going to have the party. And we have war veterans there. We have some beautiful, probably Instagram influencers there. You have folks walking around. Everybody's trying to pick up Thor's hammer, and it gives you all the feels of why you love hanging out with these characters. It's not just that they're saving the world. It's just that I genuinely want to be one of them, or at least get a plus one to that party, Coy.
Whatever, man. It's a trick.
Well, please be my guest.
Come on.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, Clint, you've had a tough week. We won't hold it against you if you can't get it up.
You know I've seen this before, right? Yeah. And I still don't know how you do it.
Smell the silent judgment.
Please, Stark, by all means.
Never one to shrink from an honest challenge.
Uh-oh. Get after it.
Here we go. It's physics.
Physics.
All right, so if I lift it, I then rule Asgard?
Yes, of course.
I will be reinstituting Prima Nocta.
I totally agree. And that is why it's a very good comic book movie. But all of the things that we just let go are why it undermines the MCU quality. It is a giant 24 episode series. If you got every episode as the Fly episode in Breaking Bad, it's not the same show. I love the Fly episode, but that's because it's unique in that it builds to a different tone. But you can't have everything feel disjointed and let things be. Otherwise, you become a not shared universe and you have to start making the Batman be separate from the rest of the movies in your universe. It's a very tricky thing. It's a very tricky thing to balance it all. So I just think we should hold it to a certain standard where Iron Man 2 wasn't as good as Iron Man 1 and 3. And right now, this is rated right near Iron Man 3, which I think is not fair. I think Iron Man 3 is a slept-on masterpiece, whereas this should be seen with a little bit more scrutiny.
We'll come back when we talk about Iron Man 3, but we're going to talk about this. And when we talk about this, even I really want to like clarify this, because I did write a lot about where this thing places in the MCU and the Herculean task that Joss Whedon was given to try and execute in this and all the things that it set up. But I also just flat out enjoyed the movie. The movie itself was enjoyable to me. I will admit it was engineered to be enjoyable to me because of how many people in it they added that I love. Like, first of all, when they announced James Spader as the villain and that it was going to be a voiced character, I was like, so all about it. Because for folks that don't know, before he was on Boston Legal and he got like normal and now he's doing like NBC shows, James Spader was weird. James Spader was doing like a lot of sex and weirdness back in the early 90s and late 90s and early 2000s. I mean, he did Crash, which I'm not talking about the Oscar winner, as another movie where people have sex when they wreck cars. He did Sex, Lies, and Videotape. He did The Secretary, which was like BDSM, like way before 50 Shades of Grey. That dude was a freak. And like, add in, he was the mean guy from Pretty in Pink. I love everything that James Spader does. And then for him to do this, I was like, they are bringing the freaks to the MCU. Also, Aaron Taylor Johnson, who plays Quicksilver, I was like all about him. He was, for folks that don't know, he's married to Sam Johnson, who directed him in Nowhere Boy. Really great actor. And he's gorgeous. Like, let's just be honest. And he dates an older woman, which means that he's very comfortable with his manhood. So I'm like all about Aaron Taylor Johnson. Like, he's like all my dude. And so those things are amazing, but it has great moments. And the scene that I actually love is the opening. And I will tell you why, because first of all, yes, everyone talks about language and that, but like, there's just so many quotable moments from that. Language is one of them. Also, you know, big guy, sun's getting real low. Like, I think about that payoff in Thor Ragnarok. And like, I know that's a later thing, but still, I just love that everything that they're doing there. And the best one for me, when Tony Stark pushes open the door, when he's like going to find the like hidden room that maybe has like the Tesseract, he pushes it and he goes, yay, just like that. He just like, he does a little like, yay. And it's just Robert Downey Jr. having so much fun playing that character that he felt the freedom to do just that little throwaway. And it was perfect. It's like, he's in that character. He's become it. It's like they're stitched together at that point. And it's that way with so many of the characters. So
I love
the opening scene.
Shit. Language. Jarvis, what's the view from upstairs?
The central building is protected by some kind of energy shield.
Wait a second. No one else is going to deal with the fact that Cap just said language?
I know.
Just slipped out.
Opening scene is great, and I am such a fan of when I get to use big words like juxtaposition on this show, because when you put that opening battle sequence where we have quips, we're shooting bad guys, we're winning, and then you pair it with the end with Sokovia, where the film has all led up to this moment where Ultron is just basically going to take over the world and eradicate humanity, and so the only way to save it is we have to fight. And a lot of folks in Sokovia are going to lose their life because half of their country is getting lifted, literally levitated above ground so we can fight this evil. And it's so serious and it's so dreadful. There's some moments of levity, obviously, because of the Avengers and who the cast is. But for the most part, it just weighs on you in a way that I felt it as an audience member that I didn't feel with Avengers or any other superhero movie until that point. That is what sticks out about Age of Ultron to me, is that we very rarely talk about the expense of being a superhero, the bodies and the lives that are lost, and what that does to a superhero's psyche. Because yes, you probably saved people. You probably saved more people from dying, but you still weren't able to save everybody. So you get to see some of that tortured soul that even in Batman films, it's hinted at, but it's never really pointed out. If Batman has a bad night and a bunch of people die, what does that do to him? Look at Mark Ruffalo in this film when he's recovering from hulking out and he's realizing what he just did. Like, dude murdered a lot of people accidentally. Wasn't his fault, but he killed a lot of people. And so to go from the first movie where it's Avengers and it's fun and games and I hope we save New York and I hope all these buildings don't fall on anybody, to this where, no, the buildings fell on a lot of people. It first of all hints at stuff we're going to get in later MCU movies, things that are going to come back from Sokovia. But we also just feel everything with these heroes. And I think the movie sets us up like that, Coy. I think the movie opens up. We're on a fun adventure. We're at a cool party. And it says, hey, don't you want to be like these people? Okay, well, now see what they really go through.
So most of my arguments have been narrowly looking at just this. So expanding it out to comparing it and putting it in the scope of the MCU. The opening scene is actually one of the things that really worked but didn't if you compare it to the rest of the MCU, because there's a lot of weightlessness to it. If you look at the actual action set pieces individually, Iron Man has, as you know, his quips and things, but they do this thing where they undermine the jokes, which you specifically can appreciate why this doesn't work for me. There's a scene where Iron Man's getting shot at and he's like, no, stop, let's talk about this. That's the joke. That's the beauty of it, is Downey delivering that wonderfully. The follow-up joke to that is him shooting this and shooting them all with like tranquilizers and saying like, good talk. That's your alley-oop. That's where it lands. But then they undermine all of that by having some henchmen go, no, it wasn't, which makes it not funny. It makes it a kid's movie, and these aren't kids' movies. Like, there's moments that are like, why didn't you trust Downey Jr. to be funny? You cast Robert Downey Jr. Like, let the moment and let the joke land. Don't show like, hey, that was a joke. And that kind of, when the movie opened with, remember, this is funny, I was like, but this is an Avengers movie. This isn't a kid's show. And also, like, Captain America throwing the motorcycle is awesome. But now we have no level of what power set Cap is. In the first Avengers, Cap is jumping around outside the helicarrier and you're worried about him because he's thousands of feet in the air. In this movie, he throws a motorcycle in the opening scene. So you're like, wait, is anyone not super powered except Hawkeye? Like, there's so many moments that undermine the whole series.
No, that was already established in Winter Soldier. They already made him Leg Man in that movie. So
yeah,
no,
boy, when you throw a motorcycle, you want to get your legs into it. For everybody listening at home, if you're throwing motorcycles as part of your workout, it's not in your back, okay? You want to stabilize your core with your quads and with your hams and your glutes. That's how, I mean, he is America's ass after all. There's a reason why he's America's ass.
That's just training.
He's throwing 10 motorcycles, three sets of that. I get that you could be confused with the powers or the level of their powers, because it does seem like some of our superheroes are able to survive a lot more than they would have in films leading up to this moment. But I kind of write that off as like, well, that's the training of being a superhero. It's like Steph Curry, his rookie season in the NBA, probably not as productive as he was 5 seasons into the NBA when he was probably the best point guard on planet Earth. And this film, though, with sense of humor, I always look at the villain. And with Ultron in particular, he's got, because he's in the MCU, it's like, well, what, you're going to be a villain and not crack jokes? But he's got such a subtle, such a dark sense of humor that I
think... Dark sense of humor. Yeah, dude, the kicker.
For me, I think the sense of humor worked because it came off as menacing. Jacqueline, do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. That was the other reason why, on top of it, you know, getting the dude from Stargate to do it, like, it was also the fact that his voice can have that sort of like venomous feel to it, but also be comedic. Like, he could literally say something that would reference your death and you would maybe want to giggle about it. Like, that is some power, and you can only do that with certain voices can do that, you know? And James Spader clearly has one of those voices. So I loved everything that he was doing as Ultron. Also not the only great voice work that was going on. This is just a me thing. There was a show on HBO called Rome. Nobody watched it, but if you're like a period piece, like people in costumes person, like myself, it's the movie. But Carrie Condon is in that, and she actually voices Friday, who takes over for Jarvis slash Vision, well, takes over for Jarvis when he becomes Vision. And I just love the fact that they put her voice in there because she's got a really great voice. And I thought that was like a great turn from Vision. You got to bring in, I don't know, some flair to it. You don't often hear like a, I think she's either Scottish or Irish coming that heavy in an MCU movie with that kind of accent.
I love through 90% of the film because he is James Spader, especially with, you know, the secretary and all the things Jacqueline was speaking to. But I think that the, and it might be studio, it might be Joss, but the moments that I really like are when they take their time and when they let things land and they don't undermine it with humor. That's the very wonderful balance I think the MCU has landed is I love the amount of quips and jokes. The Marvel comics are fun to read. That's why we read them. Even Catholic guilt-ridden Daredevil is funny because that's the tone of the world. But there's moments in this, like right seconds after Quicksilver's killed, spoiler alert for a six-year-old movie, seconds after he's killed, they cut to a James Spader joke where Hulk jumps in the Quinjet and he goes, "Oh, for God's sakes." And I'm like, but he just died. Let us have this moment of like mourning. And then they cut back to Hawkeye carrying him onto like an escape raft. So we're supposed to go like, "Oh, I feel horribly. Oh, that was kind of funny. Oh, I feel horribly." It's like, just move that edit, slide that shit 20 seconds. Let me actually be impacted for a moment. And that's kind of like a thesis statement for my problem is every time they have Cap like fighting Ultron, there's a weird like action figure line, like, "Can you keep up?" And there's no other movie in the MCU where Cap is throwing out like bro slogans. It's like they were like, "Wait, Chris Evans is from Boston? What if he says this silly thing?" And like the movie just has a lot of those moments that don't feel like the rest of the MCU in a bad way.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I will ask you this, though, because this is the other thing, too, now, is like the more you talk to people about movies who make movies, the more you realize the literal, like, divorce proceeding level of argument that happens when they make them. Like, literally. I mean, think about the most venomous divorce you've ever thought of, and that is, like, one day on a movie set. Because it's the same situation of like, you guys are married to each other in a lot of ways and you're trying to get something done and everyone's got different priorities. And so you got to like argue this stuff out. And I feel like Joss Whedon's language is reeled in by studios a lot of the time, like his broier, more problematic things. I think they let the language go on this one because of the bigger ask on the story. So I think, because if you look at Avengers and you look at this one, you can see where he got smoothed over on that one. And this one, as far as the like dialogue was concerned, it didn't feel smoothed over. Maybe it was a timing issue. I don't know. It just didn't feel as polished as far as like, this joke definitely belongs here. This joke lands. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So again, I it's me looking past the glass a little bit and taking that into account, but it can't be denied. Like, I'm sorry. Like, yes, we're looking back on this with like rose tinted glasses, knowing where it goes, but you can't take that away now. Like, okay, well, people didn't appreciate Citizen Kane when it was out. It doesn't mean that we don't know that it's a masterpiece now. And if you're in now, which what we are, and you're not taking that into account, I think you're missing half of what the movie did.
I think that if we were looking at Avengers Age of Ultron, I always go to Quantum of Solace, oddly, for a comparison like this, because we all loved Casino Royale, the first Bond movie with Daniel Craig. And then Quantum of Solace came out and we're like, what the hell was that, leaving the theater? But then, at least the way I rationalized the paying $15 for a ticket, because I live in LA, is, okay, well, that probably sets something up that's going to pay off in the next movie. And I don't know that Quantum of Solace did that, but I love Skyfall. And so it at least got me to the next movie. But I think what this did, it not only got us to the next movie, Avengers Age of Ultron, you had Ultron come out, and then I believe it's Ant-Man, and then you're right into Captain America Civil War as far as MCU timeline goes. And so if you have a movie that not only sets all that stuff up, but you can enjoy a majority of that ride. But I do want to stress, it's not just that I'm like loving and shoving popcorn into my face and laughing at all the Avengers jokes and looking at all the cool action scenes. Like, I do feel a new emotional depth was reached with this movie. And one of the scenes that pertains to that is the farmhouse scene where we all, our heroes need a safe house to hide out at for a while. And so, lo and behold, Hawkeye, who the hell knew, Clint Barton's got a family and they're cool. He's married to Linda Cardellini, for God's sakes. And he's got two beautiful tykes running around. And so we all go retreat to this farm for a little bit. And you talk about being overwhelmed with company. Imagine having like the world's greatest heroes just all crash at your pad for a few days. And
she was relaxed, by the way. She was just like, oh, I know who you are. What?
So cool with it. And she is so cool with letting her husband go play with these big boys and girls. And it's like, hey, let's remember, Clint ain't got any special powers, okay?
Sorry, didn't call ahead.
This is an agent of some kind.
Gentlemen, this is Laura.
I know all your names.
Ooh, incoming. Hi, sweetheart. Hey, buddy. How you guys doing?
These are
look at your face.
Smaller agents.
Oh my goodness!
Did you bring any nuts?
Why don't you hug her and find out?
Sorry for barging in on you.
Yeah, we would have called ahead, but we were busy having no idea that you existed.
I love your avenging. That was so cute.
Yeah.
Also, wait a minute. We haven't gotten, we're getting a Hawkeye television show, I think, but we hadn't gotten a Hawkeye standalone movie. But you could argue if we did that parts of this are setting that up too, because this is the most we've learned about Hawkeye in this movie. I mean, every major thing that happens with him later, as far as like emotional, is related in some way to stuff happens here. His relationship with Nat, his family, like all the stuff that happens with him later. Again, I know rose-colored glasses, but this movie did a lot. And I also just want to add, since we're talking about people, Andy Serkis as Ulysses Klaue. Listen, I love that. He made the choice, by the way, Andy Serkis made the choice to make him South African, which was just like such a brilliant touch. And I could watch him talk about kettlefish on repeat for 24 hours straight and it would not lose an inch of enjoyability.
This is your first time intimidating someone. I'm afraid, I'm not that afraid.
Everybody's afraid of something.
Cuttlefish, deep sea fish. They make lights, disco lights, to hypnotize their prey, and then I saw a documentary, it was terrifying.
This is one of those retrospect things for me, so I will side with Coy on this one thing, is when I was watching it, because I totally forgot Andy Serkis pops up in it as Klaue, and when I saw him, I was like, oh, right, he's in this, and I had no idea why he was in it at the time I saw it, but now I love that he's in it, because I know all the things that happened since then. So that's literally me ratifying what Coy has said about this film to this point. But Coy, I agree with you as far as the Klaue thing goes. Here's my question about Andy Serkis, this movie. Did he, and again, I don't body shame anyone. I tried to body uplift. Did he bulk up insanely for this movie, or is that just how he looks all the time?
I think he did.
He's a really mobile, like the way he moves for his work. I think he's always been physically fit, so he knows like the how to build. So I think he just used all of his training and mocap to be like, how do I become an animal physically?
He's just thick in this. And I guess I'm comparing him to Gollum, and I'm like, wow, Gollum's really been hitting the protein shakes, because he's just like so jacked.
He's all forearm too. He's got like specific gains.
I do think that was a little bit of like he like the eight movies were literally right at the same time, like one of the last ones, I think. So I think that was really, that was like the second one. I take that back. That was the second one. The next one came later after that. Dude, I just give me more of Andy Serkis. That role. And the one thing I thought of when he handed him vibranium was like, oh yeah, Sterling K. Brown helped you get that. Like Randall from This Is Us help you get that, because like when you go to Black Panther, that was Michael B. Jordan's dad who
I also love the idea of him coming right off the ape set and being like, I've trained for this my entire life, being like ready to be physically clawed.
He is so good. But that is another one of those scenes where you watch it and you say, well, I'm sure this is going to pay off. Like, again, I guess at that point, if that was like the first or second movie in the MCU, I'm like, well, y'all are really biting off more than you can chew. But I think by that point, I just trusted the MCU. I mean, this, again, is the franchise that really established itself as the post-credit people. And so now you're getting basically three or four post-credit scenes within the context of the film, which I can understand it can be overwhelming, but it's also like, look at all the candy we get. Look at all the things we have to talk about what the future could hold, which transitions us to our next segment, which is out of movie scenes just so far as let's talk about what did surround this movie and the making of it. Because as Jacqueline and Coy have hinted at, Joss Whedon, this movie, I mean, anytime a movie making experience makes you leave Twitter, you know that it was something. It was a thing. And with this, What was so cool about reading some of the research that our beautiful researcher, Mark Hoffmeyer, put all this together. I'm reading this thing about how the hot tub Thor scene was demanded by the studio. Joss Whedon had no idea what exactly we're doing, what we're setting up, but the studio demanded it. And so Joss Whedon used that farmhouse scene, which the studio wanted to cut, as his collateral. He's like, okay, well, if I do this scene for you, then we got to leave the farmhouse sequence in there. And so I think that if we had seen a movie that didn't have Hot Tub Thor or the farmhouse scene, I think we get a lesser movie.
Yeah,
I agree. The farmhouse scene is my favorite entire sequence. It's actually one of my favorite sequences in the MCU. The farmhouse stuff is so, so important. And I think that the hot tub thing is worth that cost. Like the deficit of one of my least favorite scenes is worth one of my favorite scenes. I think the MCU is like going to your favorite restaurant. For me, my experience is every single time I go to this restaurant, it's absolutely delicious. And the Age of Ultron experience was just an adequate meal. So at worst, I'm just like, it was a time I went to the restaurant. So it's worth having that delicious bite of the farmhouse for like the lukewarm bite that is the tripping balls Thor. But at the same time, my standard for the restaurant is going to stay so very high that when I hear stories like Joss Whedon quitting Twitter, I'm more upset that it happened because of the transition of power. I think this had a lot to do with Disney just buying the entire studio that was Marvel. This was the first officially Disney branded Marvel film, if memory serves. The ads felt a little more Disney-fied. Like, this was the first time I was like, oh, someone bought my restaurant. I'm aware that there's a new chef and they're going to find their balance. And like the Russo brothers became the new head chef. And I was all about that. Thank you, Russo brothers. Like, that is a great chef to have in the back of the house. But while they're transitioning and the old chef's teaching the new chef all the tricks, I tasted the difference. It's a little salty and I'm aware of it. So that's the issue I have with Ultron. A little salty.
That might be the greatest comparison I've ever heard on this show, Jacqueline. We've been doing this for a while now. Corey, that's a standing ovation from producer Lucy. That is something special. And it does jive. That plays with me. I understand the restaurant, because it's not like you go to like for me, I'm not going to go to Cheesecake Factory, have one bad meal and be like, well, I guess this restaurant's done. It's like, no, there's so much on the menu to enjoy. Just give it another shot.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like the menu for me, actually, if I'm thinking about it this way, I think this movie and how it ended up with the Joss Disney relationship is more interesting than anything that happened as far as like what went wrong or whatever. That this guy was their golden boy prior to this movie. And after this, he couldn't even like get a job with them doing anything. It was just like an instant souring of everyone's opinion of it. And they were pissed at him for making the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Like, the fact that he couldn't be their person to only focus on the MCU, they were upset by that. And if you look at it, the Russos, for the most part, were solely focused on Avengers until like right before the end, when they started doing some more production work.
That's interesting. And around the same time, you started to hear of directors attached to various standalone MCU films dropping out. And these are directors that are that are names, like Joss Whedon was. And I mean, when an Edgar Wright, or I think was Ava DuVernay attached to one at one point? And they say creative differences or whatever, and you say, okay, well that happens, and it's more public because it is this gigantic franchise now. But I think people are wondering, well, who is really pulling the strings? It's like Ultron. It's like, okay, well, who is in charge? Who is the robot controlling this world? Is it the director, the filmmaker you hired to do the job, or is it the studio who has these 20 movies that you need to set up, and you're kind of force feeding the director? And so from the narratives that were coming out around that time, it did seem like this is Disney / the MCU saying what they want. And I don't know if the Russos came in and just jived with them so well after that. I don't know if Ryan Coogler came in and had a fantastic pitch, if they had to sell Coogler on it, but it seems like we got more artistic voices into the MCU despite that. But I don't know if Avengers Age of Ultron was the breaking point.
I don't know if it was either. I was just going to say, I don't know if it was either, but I will say, as far as the convincing Ryan Coogler, I can't attest to that. I did the Black Panther set visit, and Nate Moore, who produced Black Panther, and I think he was at least an EP or something, maybe on Civil War. He talked about how he had to have a conversation with Ryan to be like, look, we are going to support you in this story, because he took convincing, because he had heard that Marvel was a difficult place for directors to work creatively. I mean, this is after Ava had already walked away from the process of making that movie with them. Edgar Wright had left the Ant-Man situation. There'd been already people saying, okay, is this really where I want to be making my next movie? Oh, Patty Jenkins with Thor, The Dark World. Yeah. She was originally going to do that, and then she left the project because of creative differences. So it's really interesting to think of how that thing would have went differently had they maybe loosened up.
I also think that the timing with this was Ike Perlmutter leaving soon thereafter with his like his strong arm of control. Because if you look at this movie, there wasn't even Black Widow toys because that guy was such a specific. Yeah. I'm not going to get into it.
Basically, just for a little bit of context, it was Perlmutter was running, but the TV division, I think. But then he was kind of overstepping his bounds somewhat with Feige into the MCU. And so when you didn't have that one figurehead looking over all of it, you had the TV versus the movies for a while. There was just that conflict that needed to be resolved. And so Perlmutter.
Oh, he was originally Feige's boss, though. He was overseeing everything.
That's
and then
what
they made
there
a TV.
Go.
Yeah. Like, at first he was overseeing everything and Kevin Feige was like a lower rung producer, and then they moved him over to TV, and then they're like, just get this guy out of
it. Didn't he buy like all imitation brand soda or something? like the cat, when a Coke and Diet Coke,
generic soda for the premieres. He refused to buy Coca-Cola.
These movies are making $1 billion. He's like, whoa, let's go to Costco real quick. Let's be easy on this.
Are we talking like Shasta?
Yeah,
we're talking Shasta.
At a Hollywood premiere.
Yes.
Oh no!
I'm not going to throw RC Cola in the Royal Crown. Has its own thing. Cheerwine has its own demographic. That is a quality soda. But yeah, when you start talking about your Dr. Perky's of the world, then you start getting into a Perlmutter cheap territory.
But I think that's how we got Ryan Coogler and the directors with such vision in Phase 3. We had Kevin Feige saying like, "Hey, that guy's gone. Talk to me now." And then you get your Taikas, your Ryan Cooglers, your geniuses that have vision and can live by the rules of this. Because that's what's so hard about Marvel is you're playing by both the showrunner standard, which is Kevin Feige, your director's vision, and living in the giant moving train and machine that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think that some of the best directors can't do that, even if they're the best directors. But I also think you have to have a really beautiful way to handle people, which Kevin Feige does, which is what the MCU is more about, the incredible machine that Kevin Feige's been able to do as this benevolent leader of people. And I think that when Ike was there, you got your Age of Ultrons, you got your not getting a Black Widow movie, you got your insane John Cheadle choice, you got your Rebecca Ferguson not getting to be the villain in Iron Man 3 because he thought the fire-breathing guy would sell more toys. Why did that guy breathe fire? We'll never know. There's just so many things that just, there's a little moment that it's tainted in the MCU. And I think this lives right around there.
Okay, so to kind of put a button on the industry talk, I do have to go to back to the world of opinions and say, with everything that we know about the making of this movie, with everything we know about watching the film, where does this rank in our top MCU movies of all time? Because, Coy, Jacqueline, I have seen lists that have this not only in the double figures, but in the 20s, where it's like people have Thor the Dark World and then Avengers Age of Ultron, and then The Incredible Hulk. I think The Incredible Hulk doesn't get enough love either. But this movie, I texted Lucy, as soon as I finished watching Ultron, it immediately went into Civil War, because I hit the button to put it into Civil War because I wanted to see Captain America Civil War. And I made it through most of that movie the same night. And I was like, I don't know which one I actually like better. I like the introduction of Black Panther and Spider-Man in Civil War, but man, Ultron held up a lot more than I thought it did. So I'm going to put this at least in my top 10.
I don't know. I think it's 10, but if it isn't 10, it's definitely like very low teens, like 11 or 12. And I only say that because I like weird things. Like the Doctor Strange movie that everybody hates, like I dig that thing like none other. I love, love, love that movie.
Is that your favorite one? What's your favorite MCU film, Jacqueline?
I mean, come on. Black Panther. Like, really?
I'm not going to say it for
you. First of all, I guess it's racist for you to presume, but it's also like beyond belief for me to say anything different.
No, actually, because when you said, come on, the first thing I thought of was, okay, wait, which movie has more naked Thor in it than...
Since you just said weird, I went Guardians, so I would have guessed wrong too. You're like, I like weird. I'm like, Guardians? Guardians 1?
Maybe no. Guardians 1. Y'all are ridiculous. No.
We're so progressive for it.
I'm going to go with the movie that had Kendrick Lamar on the soundtrack. Yes, that is definitely my favorite MCU movie.
I will give a nod to Run the Jewels for inspiring us all with the first Black Panther trailer. Black Panther's probably in my top five now. Coy, this is tough. Find me some time. Do you have your favorite
MCU movie? If I'm going sexy weird, I'm standing by my Guardians. But they're not my number one, but like it's my number one sexy weird. I think my number one is Winter Soldier. And then I think Guardians and Iron Man 1 dance at number 2, just because without Iron Man, we don't have the flavor of the entire universe. And if you rewatch it, it doesn't feel like a 12-year-old film. This, to be honest, and this is gonna, I'm so sorry, internet, this probably lands around number 20 for me in the entire MCU. But if you looked macro, that means it's in my top 50 of like movies. Because I love the MCU so much that, like, I got to give the caveat. Just because this is 20 in the MCU means it's still in my upper echelon of film. But look at how many MCU movies are amazing. Like Winter Soldier, Civil War, Iron Man. I think Iron Man 3 is genius. Guardians. Like, it's just because of the goodness.
That's the weirdness here is, like, I don't like the first Captain America that much. I don't like pretty much all the Iron Man except for the first one that much. I still, by the way, when I say don't like them that much, I mean, I'm not obsessed living for every second of it like other ones. But I also like really like the first Thor movie, and so many people hate that movie. Like, I lived for the first Thor movie.
That was
I
fun.
Thought that was absolutely that was a fun one. Excellent. But I didn't dig Ant-Man as much.
I still stick with the first Iron Man, Avengers. I mean, Infinity War and Endgame are great movies too, but Civil War's way up there. Black Panther's way up there. Producer Lucy, do you have a favorite MCU movie of all time? I saw you go crazy when Coy said Guardians of the Galaxy. Is that going to be your final answer?
Yeah, I'm Coy Light. I'm the same. Iron Man and Guardians are tied. Iron Man as a film, I think, would be the only one that Martin Scorsese wouldn't talk shit about, like, you know, on a filmmaker level. But, it really is incredible. Jon Favreau is a genius. And Guardians, to me, I love space stuff. And I love, to me, I'm a big fantasy lover, sci-fi lover. So that felt the most out there. And I just love ensemble, you know, quote unquote, freaks in a movie together. So watching that was so much fun.
I think if you
did
apply
you like
all
the
my
greatest
criticisms...
Showman? Lucy.
Yeah, I didn't when I first watched it, if you remember, and then I was like, I'm a changed woman, I love it now. Yeah.
So if you apply all my criticisms, I think, to Age of Ultron to my top three, I think Winter Soldier being my favorite, it allows for comedy but serious action with world building, with escalation. It has even more villains than Ultron, but it doesn't fall into a lot of the tropes that this one, the third act of this is just another gray Minions with a space hole. Instead of the hole going up, the hole's coming down. It's the same third act. If you apply the my problems with comedy and you look at Guardians, Guardians builds an entire team instantaneously and has the weird humor of, you know, a Joss Whedon type humor through James Gunn, and it doesn't have weird throwaway ADR lines. If you look at the pacing issues, I think in this one, Iron Man, which started the whole damn thing, is paced like a masterpiece, and as is Avengers. This movie is 2 minutes longer than Avengers and feels four times as long. There's just issues. It's a salty dish.
The salty.
I did not say that it was a perfect movie. I said that it achieved the. We done the impossible. Come on now.
Jacqueline,
makes us mighty.
I kind of feel like Jacqueline and I are Coy's parents, and we all took our son to see this comic book movie, and the parents just had a good time at the movie, and our kid seems bummed out about it for some reason.
If I wasn't a professional comic nerd, I would be very with you. If I was going into this like, yay, then yes, but I have to be scrutiny because the bar is so high. If we let the bar slip, it all falls apart. It's a very delicate puzzle.
Yeah, it's a delicate ecosystem, huh, boy?
I do like Winter Soldier upon rewatch. I'll never forget. Winter Soldier is just one of those movies when Christian and I were doing Schmoes reviews. I had the gall to give Winter Soldier like a 3.8 out of 5 Schmoes as opposed to like 5 out of 5 everybody else was giving it. And I just got crushed online. Back when the only place people could find you was the YouTube comment section. I do have some trivia for Avengers Age of Ultron, the year it came out at the box office. But before I get to that little trivia tease, Coy, John Drew, it was a pleasure as always to see you once again, hear your smiling face, enjoy all your criticisms, all of your love for this movie and the MCU. Where can all the kids find you out there, and what are you working on right now?
So I host a show called Comic Book Shopping, because if you guys couldn't tell by this rant, and I didn't even talk about how Stan Lee had to make Thor spin the hammer so there were physics to actually allow him to fly versus Superman who just flies, and how the physics of this film really bothered me because of Stan Lee's integrity. Didn't even get into that because I didn't want to go that nerdy on you guys. That is the realm I like to live in. I do a show called Comic Book Shopping where I bring the people that create this art to the comic book store and I show them the source material. So I read about 300 comics a month. So I have a Rolodex of everything new and old, and then I show people stuff they might like. So while I'm interviewing them, I'm going through my Rolodex of comics and then I curate a list of things they might enjoy to try to convert people to comic book people. I also have a show called Coycast, which is a podcast about everything comic book news. I do a show on YouTube called Coy Cubed. I'm a narcissist. There's a theme here. And then a bunch of other stuff on my YouTube. And then my Patreon, I do reviews that people select. So if they think I might like or not like something, I review those. And I rate every single comic I read. So of the hundreds of books I read, I give a rating for each and every one of those so people can save some money and discover some new comic books. So Patreon, YouTube, podcasts, I'm all over the internet with comic book stuff. But most of all, I want to say, before I lose this audience that won't look at me because I scrutinized this film, I love this movie. I just think, like Jacqueline said, the ecosystem. If we let any litter clutter the beauty that is the MCU, we worked so hard to get here. If we didn't have Blade, if we didn't have X-Men, we didn't have Spider-Man leading the path to Iron Man 1, we wouldn't be in this glorious golden age of superheroes. So if we let the Iron Man 2s fall through the cracks, then we suddenly are living in a X-Men 3 age, and I will not stand for another X-Men Origins Wolverine. I won't stand for it.
I feel like we're arguing about the Sokovia Accords. Like, we need oversight from the studio. No, we can't have the studio be the one that dictates everything. Go support Coy's Patreon, because now everybody can go there and donate a little bit of the bucks to a very hardworking friend of mine every month. But more importantly, once you do that, you can demand that he just keeps rewatching Age of Ultron over and over and over again. Just make him keep reviewing it week after week after week. If I don't give you anything inside the MCU, Coy, so I'm taking away Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that other stuff, what's like a streaming recommendation that you can throw to people who, if they liked Age of Ultron, or maybe they had an issue with Age of Ultron, and you say, okay, well, here's something kind of like that was done better?
You know, my streaming poll was something completely outside of comic books. I was going to recommend a show that is trying to get a fourth season renewal that is amongst my favorite bit of content in the history of anything. The show Kingdom on Netflix is a show about masculinity in a very new light. And it doesn't look at it as toxic or positive. It doesn't look like it doesn't look at it with a judgmental lens. And it's about fighters. And I feel like the MMA community gets judged very broily. I feel like the world of fighting is seen as you know, blood sport. But there's so much art in martial arts that doesn't get looked at. And this show takes its time to really look at this family dynamic, about the world of fighters, about this incredible culture that a lot of people immediately judge, much like comic books. So my parallel is I grew up looking like Flash Thompson, but I think like Peter Parker. And I've been judged as both a bro and a nerd. So I feel like Kingdom allows my bro side to get some levity. And it allows me to go like, no, we're not monsters. We just punch each other because we love it for the sport. So MMA means a lot to me. And the show Kingdom was unceremoniously canceled after 3 seasons because it was on Audience Networks, which I didn't know existed. It was like a DirecTV only show. Now it's doing gangbusters on Netflix for good reason. It's up there with Breaking Bad for me as far as caliber of show. Frank Grillo is a powerhouse.
I was going to say, once you said Audience Network, ironically, I knew what show you were talking about. I was like, wait, is that the one with Grillo? Is that the one with Crossbones? Okay,
and
I got it.
Jonathan Tucker, my boy Jonathan Tucker from back home. Like, he's a Boston boy that should be a multi-Emmy award-winning champion. And he plays this incredible powerhouse. The show is just, it's so perfect. And it's one of those things that when people find it, they're like, why didn't I see this 5 years ago? Save it before it's gone. Save Kingdom. Kingdom on Netflix. Changed my life.
That's odd because my streaming recommendation, as it is each and every week, was going to be Bloodsport. You can find Avengers Age of Ultron on Fandango Now and Vudu currently. Jacqueline Coley, where can all the kids find you and all of your tweets and witticisms and articles and all the other hard work you're doing?
Well, you can always head over to RottenTomatoes.com to read about what I'm writing, usually about this year's Oscar season. Very interesting season. And also you can follow me on anywhere at that Jacqueline, because I'm that girl that talks about movies. Coy, this was really fun, sir. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. I had a great time.
I cannot wait to be doing a movie that we see the same way, but I don't feel like I have to tarnish because of my opinion. Like, I'm not like, it's Almost Rotten, but we say all the same things. I just have to say they're more aggressively. We're going to agree in a movie and it's going to be a jaunt. And I'm very excited.
Well,
this was a blast.
Let's see if y'all agree on the trivia question. So 2015 worldwide box office, 4 movies performed better at the worldwide box office than Avengers Age of Ultron, which is weird to say. One of them was obviously Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Can y'all name the other two movies that outperformed Avengers Age of Ultron at the worldwide box office?
It was Jurassic World that year?
Coy Jondrew is on the board.
Yes. Got nothing.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
I'm going to give you all a one-word hint, and I think you'll get it. Vroom.
Cars?
Oh, Fast and the Furious. One of the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, it was one of the Fast and Furious. I can't remember which one, but it was one of them. It was the
I want to say 7.
Furious 7. Yes.
Jacqueline, your guess was the best. Cars.
Cars.
I mean, Vroom. I love that.
Y'all can email us and give us your suggestions. We love hearing from you. Tell us what you love about the show. Tell us what movies you want. Let us know. What do you think is a rotten movie that everybody else thinks is fresh? What do all your friends think is rotten? What does the tomato meter say rotten that you think is a great movie? Hit us up anytime. RTIsWrong@RottenTomatoes.com. That's RTIsWrong@RottenTomatoes.com. Next week, I'm just here to make Coy jealous because he's really missing out, Jacqueline. We are talking about the movie. You want to talk about box office? You want to talk about worldwide box office? You want to talk about blue people plugging their tails into flying pterodactyls? Then you're talking about James Cameron's Avatar. Did I sell
it? Man, I love Ferngully.
Oh, my gosh. You know what's really funny? All I'm thinking about is this Big Bang Theory episode where they talk about the fact that they put their little tails on the animals and they put their little tails on each other when they have sex.
They don't wash them.
So, like, the tails are like fish. Like, by the way, that thought has lived rent-free in my mind for way too long.
Now you think of James Cameron, you think of that arc.
Yes, that's what I think of.
That is next week's show, folks. So you have Avatar to look forward to. Coy, once again, thank you so much for everybody here, the hardworking team behind the scenes at Rotten Tomatoes, Christian Rubalcaba, Lucy Bruckner, our glorious producer, Jacqueline Coley. I am Mealy Mark Ellis saying thank you for listening to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Click that like button if you can. Rate, review us, all that good stuff. And until next week, remember, kids, wash your tails.
Ha ha ha.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.